we pick up this week with verse 39. Well, let me finish 38 again. So Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And after he said this to Jesus, he went back outside to the Jews and told them. Now remember, primarily, these are the Jewish leaders. This is not the whole nation of Israel. We got to get that straight right out of our mind. This is primarily the religious leaders of Israel. There might have been a few just Hebrew people there as well, but for the most part, we're talking about the religious leaders who have been trying to get Jesus. And so he goes back outside to them and he says, "I find no guilt in him, but you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the King of the Jews?" They cried out again, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now, Barabbas was a robber. All right, well, I'll just kind of break this up in sections and we'll read the rest of the story. So this is, in essence, what happens. He's trying to find a way out of this, right? He's trying to find a way to appease them and still not crucify this man. He's trying to find a way, because look what he said. This man's innocent. So here's his plea bargain, if you will. If I say he's guilty, but release him, they'll be happy because he's guilty. Like, I've said he's guilty, but I don't have to kill him. You can see he's got this turmoil or this struggle, right? I don't want to kill this innocent man. Now, before we get too, friendly with Pilate, thinking, "Oh, he's a good guy, not want to kill an innocent man," I guarantee you, if that innocent man was going to affect his well-being, if that innocent man was going to do something for his own position, I'm sure he'd have just crucified Jesus. But he's got nothing in this, right? So far, the only thing he's got in it is if he doesn't make the Jews and the religious leaders happy, they might tell him to Rome. And remember last week, he's got a bad track record with Israel. Remember, I mean, he's done all kind of knuckleheaded things. He's putting idols up, and they're fighting him, and they keep on telling on him. And each time he comes home with his tail between his legs because he's been beat by them. So he's in this kind of tough spot, and yet, though, this man's not a threat to him, and this man's innocent. So he's trying to wash his hands of this, but he's trying to make the religious leaders of Israel happy. So he says to this great plan, it's Passover time, and at Passover they had this tradition of letting one guilty person off the hook. One, and this was kind of Rome's way to keep Israel happy. Remember, pax romana, Roman peace, the way they ruled their government was to try to keep the people that they've conquered as happy as possible. They didn't come in and take over and then just abolish everything that people had. They let them have their customs and their religion. They even let them have a sense of government so that the people wouldn't uprise, right? Rome's not dumb. How did Rome get into power? Uprisings. So they're trying to keep the people happy. And so this is their act of goodwill. In Jerusalem at Passover time, one guilty man gets to go free. And so he comes up before the crowd and goes, "Aha, this is my way out. Okay, I'm releasing him to you because it's Passover and I release a guilty person." I, for the life of me, cannot figure out, nor do I think it really matters, who idea it was to say Barabbas. Some texts say that the Jewish people came up with the idea. Some people said Herod came up with the idea. It doesn't matter. What does matter is the stark contrast between the two men that he's presenting to be released. Jesus, who is harmless in Herod's mind, right? In Pilate's eyes, right? This man's innocent. He can cause no harm, versus Barabbas. Now, John doesn't tell us much about him other than he's a robber, but the other Gospels tell us that he's not only a robber, but he was a murderer, and he was a revolutionist. Is that the right word? He's a revolutionist. He tried to overthrow government before. And so the thing that Jesus is being accused of by Israel up until this point is that he was going to overthrow Roman government. And Pilate says he is innocent of trying to overthrow the government. This guy is guilty of trying to overthrow the government. Which one should I release to you? It's almost a test for Israel, is it not? You say you're so concerned with this Jesus overthrowing the government. Let me give you a real revolutionist. And they all start exclaiming, "Barabbas. We want Barabbas. And so for a second, you just go, what? I kind of wrap my brain around this for a second here. This peaceful dude who, when he was arrested, someone cut off a man's ear. He fixes the ear. He's been saying to Herod, "Hey, if I wanted to overthrow your government, don't you think my people would be here fighting for me?" He's completely harmless. Or the guy who's a murderer, revolutionary murderer, robber. I don't know this. I can think of it in these kind of terms because my family's from there. This is like saying, do you want me to release to you Fidel Castro? or do you want me to release to you Antonio, which I'm harmless, I promise you. I can lead no revolution at all. No one is following me into revolution because I can't fight to save my life, especially now with this shoulder right here. Like, that's it right there. And a gun, I support your right to bear arms, but don't give me one because I'll probably shoot my foot. So suffice to say, this is kind of what's being done here, right? And I'm not kidding at all. Don't even give me a BB gun. That's dangerous enough. Paintball gun, maybe. No, that hurts too. Just toy. With the caps. Remember those? Do they even have those anymore? Yeah, they have them. And we keep them away from Caden, right? Anyways, so this is what's being done, right? Now, I want us to, just for a brief moment, I know that we're looking at Pilate, but look at the Jewish, again, for primarily we're talking about the Jewish leaders in this context. I want to say more about that in a bit. But look how far they've fallen from what had been revealed to them as truth. Again, remember, John's part of his purpose is to say that he went to his own did not receive him. Remember, that's part of what he's trying to portray to us. And so they've gone so far to say, we don't want who God has sent. Again, they don't recognize him as that. I get that. We'd rather have a guy that we know is a criminal. I mean, at the end of the day, really, Jesus is just really upset them because of power. Because now he's going around, he's proclaiming a kingdom in which the Jewish leaders are going to be left out of the picture, right? Their dominance over their people is going to be taken away from them. It's going to establish Jesus' kingdom. They don't have any more foothold, right? And so I see that. Just look at the depths they've fallen, that they're going to take a murderer over a man who I guess is revolutionary in his speech and his speech alone, but has done many wonderful things, right? And yet this is how far they've fallen. He goes on to say, John 19 says, then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests, here we go again, and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "You take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law he ought to die, because he has made himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. So we'll stop there and we'll pick up the next part. So he takes him out. I'm pretty sure that in Pilate's mind, he thought it was going to be no deal. He thought he was going to take him out there, Jesus or Barabbas. Clearly, they're going to pick Jesus to be released, and now they don't. So he's now plan B, right? This is his backup plan. So he takes him inside the palace, and he makes fun of the fact that they're saying that he claims to be their king. And so because of that, they form a crown. Not a kind crown, right? But a crown to what? Mock the statement that has been said. Do kings look like this? And he puts a purple robe around him, and he gets him beat, though, because that makes people happy, right? Well, I mean, maybe it doesn't make people happy. Let me take it back. It makes people happy, I guess, when, like, the bad guy gets beat, right? When the guy you want to get beaten gets beat. It doesn't make us happy when senseless beatings happen, maybe, unless you're, like, an MMA fan, and then you love senseless beatings because that's what that whole sport is, or hockey. What in the world? I don't get that sport. You looked at me wrong, and they throw off the gloves, and they start punching. What? Give me baseball, where at least if you get hit with the ball, then you go fight. That makes sense to me. Sorry. And in football, there's hardly any fighting. You would think that, so I'm off task right now. Anyways, suffice to say, though, in other words, I still think this man's innocent. But if I can show them how absurd the claim to kingship is, let me parade before them their king. Now, this John doesn't give us all the gory details, and I don't think we need them, and the Passion of the Christ did a fairly decent job, but they beat the man to a pulp, and they just beat him. They beat him to where he was hardly even recognizable by the time the whole story's done. But right now, he's been beat pretty badly, so can you imagine that this looks nothing like a king, right? I mean, my picture of king well, I'm twisted because my picture of king is painted by Disney. So my picture of king is Mufasa. Ooh, say it again, Mufasa. But very regal, right? Very powerful is your picture of king, right? I mean, every time you think of king, they portray him in the movies, it's a big dude, whether he's big because he's fat, because he's eating all the food, or he's big because he's the king. He's got a big beard, and he's just, there's something manly about the king, right? You're not going to picture the dude that's been beat up with a crown of thorns on his head. That's not our picture of kingship. He's doing this to mock their claim. So he parades them out. And this is where they finally have to throw their cards on the table, proverbially, right? So he takes them out. They cry out, crucify him, crucify him. So in other words, they're saying to him, yep, we still think that he's the king, or that's what he's guilty of. Pilate said to them, take him and crucify him yourself. I find no guilt. So there he goes again, trying to wash his hands of it. You take him. You crucify him. I'm not going to be guilty for crucifying this guy. But then they go, we can't. Remember, we talked about that last week. They cannot crucify. They can't do capital punishment at this point in their history, and they certainly can't crucify him. They thought, by the way, I just another side note about how far they've fallen from like just the twistedness of clinging to power. They despise crucifixion. Crucifixion was a Gentile thing. It was barbaric, and they were good, clean Israelis. Blood, remember, is dirty, and so they don't like any part of that. I mean, they stone, and I know that could be bloody, but there's something about just hanging on a tree so everyone can see you in all your glory, and I mean every bit of it, stripped just down, so they can ridicule you, and just blood pouring out. Israel has no part of that. They think it's barbaric. They just think it was wrong, and here they are screaming, crucify him. The thing they kind of detested, the thing they thought was unclean. In fact, remember, they won't even enter the palace because they thought it was an unclean place to go. And here they are screaming out, crucify him, crucify him. So they go, well, we have a law. And the law is you cannot claim to be God. I'm paraphrasing what it is. And that's exactly what this man has done. This man claims to be God. For one second, I just want to applaud them. Yay, you finally got it. Like, this is what he has been saying to you for his entire ministry that he's God. You finally got it. But you're only using it now to get rid of him. Like, you don't believe for a second his claim, and you probably wouldn't brought his claim up at all, except that you need the man to be murdered. So, but on the one hand, you still have to go, well, yay, you finally understood his teaching. Even though you don't believe it, you kind of get what he's been saying to you. When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. I think this is finally when Pilate's like, wait a minute, I really don't have any part of this. Perhaps he did have a little conscience when he thought, I don't want to kill an innocent man. But now, they just said to him, this guy thinks he's God. And all of a sudden, this guy who doesn't even know what truth is scared. Again, I'm telling you that the tester's being tested at this very moment. At this very moment, the tester's going, what if this man is God? What does that mean? What is God? Now, he has a different concept, right? Because in his day and age, the emperor was the same as God. So we're not really sure that he's fully processing this. But there's enough fear to go, wait a minute, there's something different about this guy. I don't know that I can carry out what they're wanting me to carry out. So he goes back into his headquarters, and he takes Jesus with him. He says, where are you from? What's he asking him? He's not asking him, like, where did you grow up? He's asking him, they just this claim of you're God. Well, I want to know where God comes from. Where are you from? Jesus gave him no answer. Have you ever been in that situation where you ask someone something and they don't give you, just rage, right? Pure, straight rage. It's one of those things that I fear as a teacher because there's just those times I ask a kid a question and they just look at me. And I'm just like, go to my happy place. Like, I don't want to hurt children, don't get me wrong. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just something in you that's like, I just asked you why don't you answer me? Do you think you don't have to answer me? All of a sudden, you start to realize your position and your power, right? And that's the way you feel as a teacher, as a parent, right? If your kid, if you taught your kid and he doesn't say anything, all of a sudden, you're just like, wait, I'm the dad, or I'm the mom, and you're the, come on now. I just this little side note for a little humor, because this is kind of some deep stuff we'll get back to in a second. When I was little, I didn't talk before noon. And so now I know when I go to the elementary school why children don't answer me. It's God's way of going, you remember when you did that to your dad? And now I got to call my dad every day and be like, dude, I'm sorry. I mean, I just flat out refuse to speak. And my dad, most of you have seen him. And if you haven't, let me just give, he's a Cuban man, that all of 5 foot tall, I think now. He shrunk a little, but back then he was 5'2" probably. Little dude, and you wouldn't think there'd be much rage in a little dude. Like, I'm like in the fifth grade, I'm already taller than him, and I'm thinking I'm the man by the fifth grade. Because my little dad and his funny little accent, I just thought, I'm better than you. Hey, come in, what you want for breakfast? I'd be like, Gotti! And she'd have to come and get involved, because otherwise maybe some fists be thrown. I don't even know. No, I'm just joking, my dad wouldn't do that. But yeah, he would get so angry, and so this is a true story. My grandparents came to visit us from Cuba in the ninth grade. They came to visit from Cuba, and my grandfather woke up one morning, and he was like, hola, ¿cómo está? Da, da, da. And I just looked at him. I'm horrible. I swear this is all true. I wish I was making it up, because I was a punk. Thank God that God can redeem punks, because he did. And my grandma came up, oh, ¿cómo está? Da, da, da. ¿Quieres desayuno? You know, you want some breakfast? And I'd be like, my parents would come in the room and be like, I'm so sorry. He just doesn't speak till noon. And so my grandparents would sit there, my grandfather would sit there with a watch. At noon, he'd go, ¿cómo estás? And I'd go, oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, I don't know why, people. I don't know. I should have gone some counseling about it. I have no idea why I didn't speak before noon. I just didn't. It's a true story. And then things got really bad. Right around 7 or 8 o'clock, I'd quit talking again. What is wrong with me? I don't know. But ask me anything, and I'd be like, I still revert to that some days, and it drives my poor wife insane. Y'all pray for that woman, because she's just more patient than Dagoberto. He's fuming. Anyways, he goes to Jesus and says, where are you from? And Jesus just looks at him. This is already this is way more tense situation than what do you want for breakfast? This is, they want me to kill you, but they have just told me that you are God. Speak up, Bubba. From Wachula, sorry. Speak up. Doesn't say a word. So look what happens next. Pilate said to him, you will not speak to me. I could just see him too. You will not. Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you? So there, he's just pulled out all the guns now. You're not talking to me. I hold your life right here. This is life or death. I'm the guy who's going to flip the switch. I'm the guy that, whatever the case is, if you don't answer me and tell me that you're God, you're done for, buddy. I mean, right? I mean, he's putting right there for him. I am the guy who holds your life in my hands. Look at Jesus. Jesus answered him, you would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin. I love it. Jesus goes, you trying to pull the authority card? You're trying to tell me that you have some kind of power? Let me tell you something. Any power you got isn't your power. It was given to you. That kind of shuts you up for a second, right? I mean, because you just threw the biggest card you have on the table. I have authority over your life. Jesus, you have no authority that has not been given to you from above. Claiming what? The authority you have has come from God himself. God's in control in this situation. Basically what Jesus is saying to him. You think you're in control, but you are not in control. The authority you have has been given to you by God. And we stop and think about that for a second, because many of us, and this is a little side note on the sermon, many of us never think about that. Most of us think, I want to get to a place of authority and whatever the case is, and never realize that the gift of authority has been given to you, and as such, you should be a good steward of it. And steward just means this. It's someone else's that they've loaned to you to do some good with it. So as a parent, I have authority over my son's life, right? Like I have the opportunity to crush him, right? And just whatever, or have the authority to make his life, I don't know, better, whatever. I have authority over my son's life, right? But it's not really my authority. It's been given to me. It's a precious gift that I have. I don't want to mess that one up. My marriage, whatever, she's a gift. I learned long ago there was nothing this boy produced to get that woman. I thank God every day that he enabled me to have a part of her life. And that's just truth and reality. And so I'm blessed beyond measure, and I realize that even my wife's a gift. And as such, I have to answer to someone for what I do or don't do with her. You know what I'm saying? I don't have a blank check. I'm not the dictator of anything in any area. This church, I thank God, I don't have any authority that hasn't been given. Well, I thank God for eldership authority, and we're kind of together on that, right? But I thank God that is not I'm not running around here like, aha, I am the pastor. I'll rise in my presence because I am. It wouldn't happen, and thank God it wouldn't. Just seriously, right? I mean, I'm just not in it for that. But I'm saying there is a place for authority, right? But authority that has been granted to us. That is true for him, and it's true for any of us that have any kind of authority over anything. If you're the manager at the Chick-fil-A, I was there for you, bud, and I did that too. Guess what? That's an authority, and you're entrusted with that. Do good with it. It's not yours. It's not yours to hold and wield, and it's not yours to, like, grab and take, because that's the society we're in, right? We're in the society of, I got to make it, and I got to do this to be the boss, and once I'm the boss, everything's all right. It is not fun being the boss at all. But if you are gifted with that responsibility, remember that you're a steward of it, that it's someone else's. In this case, Jesus just throws it out. I don't want to make light of the situation, but you know I do. But you can just see Jesus be like, you think you've got the authority? No. My Father has all authority, and he's granted it to you. And I love it because Jesus is silent for the most part. I mean, he could have gone on to it even more. And in other Gospels, it does share with us where he does say, you're not taking my life, I lay it down. But in this case, all we've got is, you have no authority that I've been given to you. And then he gives us the second perplexing statement, right? But the one who delivered me, I don't know if that's what my version says, but my version says that. He who delivered me over to you has the greater sin. Couple points about that. Number one, I think that clearly he's speaking of Judas in my mind, because Judas is the one that delivered him over to them. Would Pilate know about it? Well, remember, this John tells us that the Roman guards were there. So I'm assuming that he knows somewhat about Judas. What we also know about this is this. By the time this trial has taken place, Judas has already taken his life. Had word gotten out about that? Probably so. So in many senses, I can just see Jesus going, okay, you think you're hot stuff, but remember, there was another guy who has an even greater sin than yours, and we'll talk about that. It's the second part I want to talk about. But has even greater sin, and look how he turned out. Talk to me about authority. He committed greater sin than you, and kind of you know where his story ends. The second thing I want to say about that is that statement was that greater sin. He who committed greater sin. I think that is kind of pointing to him. Well, you're going to sin in this, or you have sinned in this, and I think that's true. Pilate did sin in this greater sin, and I say this as humbly as I can. Many of us get this picture of God's going to be okay with me because I'm not. My sin isn't as bad. Or you don't even think about you having sin, right? Because you've seen sin. And you go, I don't do those things. Well, I full-heartedly believe there are greater sins, but does that mean that I'm not guilty of sin myself? Look, he's not letting them off the hook. In other words, yes, someone else had a greater sin, but so do you. And so I just say that again as humbly as I can, because there's this concept of idea that, well, God will be okay with me because I'm not that bad. No, sin is an issue for all of us. And thank God that we're not all horrible, horrible sinners, but we all are sinners. And so this whole story has been how God's going to deal with sin. And I'm grateful that my sin has been paid for by Jesus. And so that's kind of what this story's been all about, right? I mean, this is what Jesus has been leading up to, that man has a sin problem. So yeah, Judas's sin, right guy. Yeah, Judas's sin was worse, but Pilate's sinning in this mess too. Because I'm going to talk about that in a bit too. Because for many years, Israel gets a bad taste because of what they did to Jesus, but they're not alone in this. The Gentiles have a hand in Jesus. And to blame it all on the Jews is pitiful. It is absolute pitiful, and I'll talk more about that in a bit. Not just because Marcia's here either, although we love Marcia. But you're not on the hook all yourself. We are too. You're welcome, Marcia. He was delivered. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you're not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on judgment seat at a place called the Stone of Pavement in Aramaic Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour, about noon. He said to the Jews, "Behold your king." They cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he delivered him over to them to be crucified. And so here he goes again, right? He was trying to get out of this. But the text tells us something important. It's the day of preparation for Passover, and time is running out. If this is to be done, it needs to happen soon. So he's under the gun. It's about noon. We know that it's got to happen before the sun falls, because when the sun falls, they can't do anything. It's a day of cleansing and preparation, so they can't do anything after the sun sets. And so they're rushing to get this thing done. He takes them out one more time. Look, this is your king. Again, mocking them as much as he's mocking him. Don't think for a second that he's not mocking the Israelites as well. He didn't like them. Pilate could not stand them. If we haven't learned that from their Jewish history books yet, or things I've been saying last week, he does not like Israel at all. So he's mocking them. He's mocking Jesus. Behold your king. And they still cry out, crucify him. Crucify him. He's an enemy of Caesar. That right there is what's motivating Pilate. Just to be honest with you. To hear he's an enemy of Caesar. Because that means that once his higher-ups hear that they are unhappy, and that's one more strike against him. And so this is his ultimate thing. The sin, I think, of Pilate is the same sin that the Jewish leaders are guilty of in this day, and it's the loss of power. Will he do the right thing and release an innocent man and perhaps lose his authority, which again I said to you was a gift, or will he cling to his authority and his power and do what they're asking him to do? I think that's what the Jewish leaders were struggling with, and I think that's what Herod's struggling with. Jewish leaders, if we allow Jesus to continue doing what he's doing, there's going to be a revolution, and we're not going to have position in the temple anymore, because he's already thrown temple changers out. He's reforming things, and they don't like that for a second. They like their position of power. Pilate likes his position of power, and this is the showdown. I, again, say to you, it's heartbreaking to me the depths of their blindness. The Jewish leaders and those Jewish people they were assembled that day, because they said to him, we have no king but Caesar. They who didn't want to be under Roman oppression, they who didn't want Caesar, all of a sudden, for the sake of rejecting their true king, are willing to take another king. And the king they're willing to take is Caesar. This has been played out for them in their history before. Before Saul and David were king, God himself was their king, but they wanted a king. And so here comes, it's almost like Old Testament being seen all over again. No, we don't want the king you're providing for us, God. We want king, and we want a man king. I don't know how you say it other than that. And so here it is, and they say, no, you can have him. We have a king, and Caesar is our king. Now, I said that I feel like the nation of Israel's gotten a bad rap about this because, I mean, yeah, I get it. In Acts, Peter preaches, and he says, yeah, because of you, Christ has been crucified. But second, hold on for one second to realize the Gentiles are sitting in the position of authority right now. He signs off on the execution orders. That wasn't an Israelite person. That was someone who despised the Israelites. He signed off. So I say to you that the Gentiles are just as guilty as the Jews are in the crucifixion of Jesus. And so any anti-Semiticism, I don't even know how to say it, is that the right word? I can't even stand it. Thank you. Has been unfounded for that purpose. That the church would go after Israel because they crucified Jesus is ludicrous. Number one, because Gentiles had a hand in it. But number two, it was the plan of the Almighty One that Christ would die for. If Christ does not die, there is no hope. That's what Christianity teaches. And to be upset with Israel for carrying out the orders of the Almighty is just ludicrous. I say that. Again, I joke a lot being from Wachula, but when we moved to Wachula, there was one Jewish family that I knew of. And the poor man he come home and there'd be signs on his yard. And I didn't understand it as a child because I was like, well, what did he do, Dad? Dad was like, well, he's Jewish. Well, what does that mean? Dad? Like, who cares what he is? Well, some people around these parts, and he'd tell me the story. I'm going, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Put a sign in my yard because Christ died for me. Put it up. Christ killer right here. Thank you that you died for me, Jesus. Put the sign in my yard. I'm ready for it. Put it in my yard. I need that sign. I need everyone to know that what I believe is Jesus had to die for me. Put it in my yard. I'm serious. But this guy, and it was a bad taste. Jew. I don't even like that word. That's why I try to say Hebrew or Israeli. Maybe it's not that offensive of a word, but it just grew up, it had this offensive buzz to me, at least in Wachula. So I wanted to say that. Just top of my hat, like, I just think that's unfounded ridiculousness. Number two, if not for Israel, we wouldn't even know what we know. Had God not redeemed Israel and given them the Torah and the prophets and the poets, what would we know anything? Indeed, God gave us Israel so we could see him and know him. Indeed, our Messiah, like it or not, is Israeli. He's a Jew. And so even in Romans, there's this, we struggle with this too, this concept of that the church is Israel and we've been grafted into the vine that is Israel. And sometimes people go, well, see, now we're Israel and there. I don't know what to do with that fully, to be honest with you. But let's lay off for a brief second and thank God for Israel and what they've done to show us Yahweh and what they've done to give us the prophets that would tell us of Messiah. Let us pray for them. I hope that you are. I am. And pray that if indeed Jesus is Messiah, that they will recognize him as their Messiah. I have loved every minute. Not every minute. There have been some minutes of my journey with Marsha Minutello. I can tell you this because she's from New York. And she's thick-skinned, kind of. There were some moments I wanted to pull my hair out because it's just going around and around in a circle. Yeah, Marsha, I know the Trinity is hard to understand. Marsha, I understand that Christians are hypocritical, but we can't just blame all Christians. We got to look at our own heart. And it was just like, I don't know how to say it a different way to you. And finally, we've come to a peace where, like, okay, he doesn't have all the answers, but he's willing to walk with me and provide what he can provide. And that's all I can do. Has she accepted Jesus as Messiah? Nope. She'll be the first one to tell you. Does she keep on coming? Yep. I don't know why, but she does. May God reveal that to be truth if it is. And that's just my take on it, right? Because look at this. These people that were yelling crucify Jesus were the religious leaders of Israel who knew the Torah better than I know the Torah. And the Torah proclaimed that their Messiah would come, and there was all these prophecies that we're seeing fulfilled right before their eyes, and they missed it. So I'm willing to cut my friend Marsha some slack and anyone else who's having a hard time embracing this. The second thing I want to say about this is this too. Whatever way the religious leader went, you could see why the nation would go. Does that make sense? If the leaders say this to be truth, and if you don't embrace this as truth, you're out. Can you see why they continue to buy it? Let me just put it in our terms. You raise a child in a Christian home, you're kind of expecting what? That they're going to be Christians. And if one day someone comes around and says, everything your mom and dad taught you was wrong, how hard do you hope your child will struggle with that? I mean, I'm just being honest with you. I hope that if one day Noah comes up and someone says to him, your mom and dad are idiots and your pastors lied to you and that church thing is nothing but false, I hope that he'd have a little bit of a hard time with that. And so that's why I say, well, good golly, their religious leaders told them this to be absolute truth, and to question that would cost you a lot. It cost you your own faith, your own heritage, and such matters such as these. So suffice to say, I just say we should be patient and present what we see in Scripture and tell them why we believe Scripture is true and tell them our story and wait for God to move in their hearts and not beat them up, because beating them up is not going to make them believe anything any quicker than if you don't beat them up. In fact, it'll probably turn them away. God must open the eyes of the people in that crowd that day, as he must open the eyes of our people today. And so we will be gentle to present the truth as we believe it to be true. And we'll labor with those who don't see it yet. Maybe they'll never will, and that's another story for another day. But till that day comes, why would we not love as we've been called to love and share truth as we've been given the gift to share truth? So I don't know what that means in the context of relationships. I don't know what that means where you're going, but I just know that everyone's been living under some kind of a faith structure, whether they knew it was faith structure or not. Atheist faith structure. Their faith structure is this. I don't have all the data, but I don't believe there's a God. So they put all their faith in there's not a God. And they've been taught that, and they see it in the science textbooks, and so here we come along and try to proclaim this to them, and so many of us have beat them up over the head with it, they don't want to have the conversation with us. But why? Hey, I'll listen to you, just listen to me. Let's just talk. Let's just be civil. Especially in a day and age where tolerance is supposed to be the most important thing. I love, and not everyone got to hear this story, when we had that missionary from France who came. He was just sharing with us, France, thank God, I don't live in France. Their weddings are like 5 hours long or something ridiculous. And first of all, they have to have a civil ceremony because in France, the separation between church and state is so great that the state only does marriages. What you did in church doesn't count. So in France, you go to the courthouse and get married first. And then once that's done, if you want to have a wedding at a church, which is just pointless because you're already married, but Christians feel that way that they should have one. They go and then they have this 5-hour long, the couple sits in chairs, the thing is so long. I'm like the world record for weddings. I think like 5 minutes and I'm done. Seriously, I'm like, all right, y'all are married, peace, let's go and have some cake. Anyways, it's a little longer than 5 minutes, but still. whatever the case, so and then they go to this big party afterwards, and the party goes on, and it doesn't really start till like 10. So I don't know how long the wedding was during the day, but at 10 o'clock, the party really gets cranking, and then you're there till like 3 or 4 in the morning. Again, I say to you, thank God, I don't live in France. The pastor, missionary church planter, says to us that he got stuck next to an atheist. And he would just, you really believe this? Yeah, I really believe that. Well, you're an idiot, science, and just shredding him, just tearing him to shreds. He says, and I don't think he's lying to me, that this went on for 2 hours. And I could believe that because Paul Davis, he's got a kind of Antonio temperament personality where sometimes I can get rolled over. Like sometimes it happens all the time. People go, you're such a pushover, and people taking advantage of you. Yeah, that's me. I'm that guy. Paul, I think, is somewhat like me. Connie wouldn't sit in a conversation for 2 hours being beraged. Connie would be like, you know what? I'm through. You've called me an idiot 5 minutes in, and Connie would have been like, peace. I'm done. I'm not an idiot. You are. Good day. I'd be there like, maybe I am an idiot. No. No, I would just sit there and take it. Finally, 2 hours later, 2 hours, maybe it's even long for me, Paul finally goes, I'm done. You, my friend, are intolerant. I'm not intolerant. I thought tolerance meant that we had to put up with each other, get along, and you don't have to believe what I believe. I'm cool with that. That's tolerance, right? You can believe what you believe, and I believe what I believe, right? And that's tolerance. And yet when I say I believe that Jesus is God, you call me an idiot because you don't think he was even a real person. Intolerant. Well, finally, he just said, now can I tell you what I believe? And the guy listened to the whole thing. I don't know how many hours that was because this is a big fiesta. And finally, the guy goes, I still don't believe it, but at least it makes sense. What? To go from you're an idiot to da-da-da. Was a seed planted that day? You tell me. The words of God were spoken. And will that grow into something? I don't know. But I tell you what, the seed wasn't planted before because it was so hard and impenetrable because all he wanted to do was da-da-da-da-da-da. But to sit back and go, okay, I've listened to what you believe. You don't have to believe what I believe. Let me just express it to you. And look at what was made. America's heading where France is, people. You want to see what we're going to be like in a few, maybe even quicker than I think. Go look at France, and that's what we're going to, and other European places. I don't know how long the year of the mega church is going to last, but sooner or later, they're going to have sucked all the life out of us and other places like us, and then there's not being anywhere else to go, and sooner or later, the people that left here or there, not here, please don't hear me like that, but people are left for the silly little reasons because you can leave because there's a church on every corner. Sooner or later, they're going to leave those big churches too because there was an issue. And that's just the way life is played now. There's an issue and I just stop hanging out with you. And I see you at the Walmarts and I head to the shopping, or I head to the sporting goods section and you head to the whatever section and you're going, why is Antonio looking at handguns? Because I'm avoiding that person like a plague and they know they would never find me there. In France, I don't have that luxury. I said this to Janet. She didn't believe me. But where he is in France, there are 3 Christians. And that's their church. I don't. Maybe we won't ever get that bad here. But let us not forget, because everyone tells me, well, we're a religious nation that was started on religious principles. Hello? All of Europe was founded on religious principles. At one time, the church was the state, and the state was the church. That's truth. You don't like it? Sorry, that was truth. And now all those places where church and state were the same, it ain't happening anymore, and those churches are dwindling or not even found anymore. So I don't know what to say other than hopefully it doesn't happen. I mean, I'm cool with it not happening. I'm the first guy that says that's a cool thing not to happen. But if it does happen, how is it that we will be salt and light? And my prayer is that we'll actually be saltier and more light, because people will finally see what church looks like instead of what we've been doing for many, many years. Again, I'm not prophetic. It might not happen in the United States. I don't claim to be prophet. Just saying, I just find it to be very interesting that these places that were more steeped in religion than this country is, or was, because this country was built on religious freedom, and those countries weren't built on religious freedom. You were all in the church kind of thing. So it'd just be interesting how that plays out. May God spare us from that. Seriously, may he. But if he so calls us to live in those days, will we still be his people? And that's the question I'm asking you. All right, that was a lot of going around just to say this. Let us proclaim what we believe to be truth, and let us be patient with people as they're on this faith journey themselves. All right? I don't know about you, but I just think that's probably a better way to go. Now, I'm all for if you want to say, hey, we've been talking for 10 minutes, you called me an idiot 10 times. I'm all for you saying stop. You're being intolerant, because apparently that's the word to say. You don't have to get beat up for 2 hours, but I am saying in our culture, church has got such a bad taste in people's mouths from some of the things they've seen or experienced, that I think it's time for us to be the hands and feet of Jesus and do some loving and some healing and some speaking for sure. Because I don't buy for a second that the gospel will just be shown. The gospel must be said. And Jesus clearly is saying the gospel, so we must do both. But here it goes again, though. Pilate's the one that was actually being tested that day. Did he pass his test? I don't think so. For a second, there might have looked like there was a little bit of hope for him. For 1 second, wait, I'm afraid because they say you're God. And yet, when he remained silent, what is he going back to? His authority. And then he just caves over to Israel, and he's done. I don't care how much hand washing he does, because he does that later. He's still guilty. He's guilty. Less guilty, perhaps, than Judas, but still guilty. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, God, thank you so much again for your words. Father, I do tease Marcia a little, Father, and she teases me a little. But God, we're grateful that she's amongst us and with us, and for her excitement and her enthusiasm. Lord, I don't know where her journey will lead her. I'm glad to be on the ride with her for this season. I pray for many more seasons together, God. Father, again, she has said this, and I say it for her, just Father, open her eyes. If this indeed is truth, will you help her see? God, thank you so much for Christ. And thank you so much that in this trial, this mockery of a trial, his innocence is still portrayed. I mean, time and time again, Pilate says he's innocent. And yet, Father, he still paid the price for sin. And so we see you're just divine hand in all of that. God, just pray for those again who aren't here. Ms. Stoken, we're glad that Tom is here today. Just continue to work your healing in his body, and continue, Father, to give him the strength to teach your word to others, God. Father, help him just be encouraged and refreshed. God, again, we do pray for Sue, that you'll heal her, whatever's going on in her body, God. And just thank you for just Chuck and his ability to care for her. Father, we lift him up.